Hi, Bob's here. I am back to recording after a little break. We have some very exciting new episodes on the way. For now, please enjoy one of my all-time favourites, and we'll be back with a totally new one very soon. Welcome back to Dating Games, a modern relationships podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Temps. And this week, I'm delighted to be joined by one of my favourite Drag Race queens, who's not only known for their humour, but possibly is an ideal guest for this show because their relationship status is built right into the character. Please welcome, in full drag, Mrs. Kasia Davis.
Hello, Bobby.
Hello. It's so good to see you. And what a sight to see. You're stunning.
Oh, well, thank you so much. And Mr. Davis has hooked me up with most modern technology here. I don't know if you know this, but now phones from cellars and basements can go on speaker. Watch this. Ready? Boop. My hand's free. I don't even need to hold it.
This is the technology.
Yeah. She's wearing nails for you today. She's wearing nails.
I love it. I love it. You know something that made me feel old recently? Apparently, you know the way we would do like a phone like this?
Right.
Yeah, you do it with your pinky and your thumb out. Apparently not anymore. Apparently the kids just like hold, they just kind of cup to their face.
Oh, let me tell you, there are many things that make me feel old, but it's just a joy to keep on going, you know, and to be a part of things. And who would have ever thought that at my age, I'm going to be turning 52 in March, that more and more is happening just like in the drag world in general, and that we're able to do stuff like this. So I'm happy to be along for the ride.
Yeah, it's a good time to be alive. It's always another day where we're pleased to still be here. I'll take it. If I set that as the bar, then anything else is a win.
Right.
Speaking of, you know, relationships are one of those things where, yeah, maybe our expectations are met, maybe they're not. You sound like you're in a great place with your relationship now. Before we get into that, though, do you have a dating story to share of back in the pre-Mr. Davis days?
Yeah, I certainly do. The first one, though, I want to tell you actually includes Mr. Davis. Mr. Davis and I have been married 20 years. And the joke on stage, I say, we're married 20 years, 10 legal, 3 happy. And then he shakes his head. But when one of our first dates, I was not a drag queen, but, you know, I'm just a fancy fella. And I did a mud mask to make sure I looked the best I possibly could. And we went on the date. And afterwards, I went home and there's a giant green glob of clay in my ear. And he had been walking alongside of me. And I thought, what do I do? So I quickly phoned him up and I'm, Stephen, was there a glob of green Queen Helene mud mask in my ear? And he's like, oh, that's what that was. I was so embarrassed. I thought he'd never go out with me again. But he did because he thought it was just hysterical. So that's that story. But I was married to a woman. We were married for quite a while, and then I came out, and I told my parents, and my mother was like, no, Eddie, you don't want to touch somebody's pickle. And I said, yes. And she's like, oh, put your pickle in somebody's duplex.
Mom, I'm not a top.
And she was saying to me all of this, and I finally had the guts to introduce to my parents this fella, and I thought he was the one, and we were on a date, and that date was on Valentine's Day.
Oh, no pressure.
No pressure. I cook a meal. I have a dessert. We sit down. I said, do you want to watch a movie? He says, well, it's Valentine's Day. I'm going to go out and see if I can get a date. So now I'm newly out. I'm insecure about all of this. I was furious. I couldn't believe the gall that he had. And to this day, I'll still tease him because I'll see him out and about in the Rochester community. But I could not even believe that that had happened. So that is probably the one that first comes to mind, because then like right after that, I was just like, I don't want anybody, you know, I don't want a relationship. I just want to go out and have fun. And that was really a good thing. I needed that. I didn't need to jump right in.
Yeah. Well, I think particularly when you'd had so much time of not living as your authentic self and having the, you know, the constraints of marriage, because it's interesting to me, you know, now you're married again and in a marriage you want to be in. I wonder, was that ever a factor in holding off getting married even when it was legalized, that you know how a marriage can be good and how it can not
right.
so much?
Well, you know what? Both myself and Mr. Davis, we were both married previously. He ended up having children. I did not. We wanted the, you know, the house with the pool and the fence and the kids, right? In our childhood. And then there were no examples of that in the queer community in our youth. So we married and stayed in the closet. It was miserable. So we had that common experience together. So we knew then that we could define this relationship any way we wished. Early on, it was very much the heteronormative type, you know, really. And as time went on, Mrs. Kasha Davis was introduced and then these types of things. And now we talk about having a special guest. It doesn't ever happen, but it's fun to talk about, you know what I mean? So we know that there are all different ways that you can define your relationship anyway. And we talk about those things. I think any relationship, the most important thing is to have those conversations. Oh, I might have an interest in this. I might have an interest in that. And maybe that's as far as it goes, you know, and it sparks.
Oh, yeah. For some people, that's plenty.
That might be it. And there's no wrong way, as we know. And it's so good that there are so many different examples. But we're very happy to be the example of Mr. and Mrs. Kasha Davis, the monogamous relationship. And also, you know, being a drag queen, many other former peers of mine have had a hard time finding a relationship just simply because they were a queen. And so it's great. I believe it's a nice example for people to say that it is possible, right?
Oh, for sure. And, you know, it's been so embraced in your case that, you know, your fans refer to him as Mr. Davis. And so even before, you know, you were married or anything like that, he was a part of your drag and embraced by the community.
Absolutely. And ever since day one. See, we had so much fun creating Mr. and Mrs. Kasha Davis together because we had gone to a place called P-Town here in Cape Cod. And it's sort of like a gay Oz, you know, much like a San Francisco, where everybody's welcome, but it's primarily a queer community. And so we saw a performer named Miss Richfield 1981. And when we saw her, it had clicked in my mind. She had created a character who had a backstory. And I thought, oh, that's like theater. And I had seen other queens like Darian Lake and Pandora Box, who have been on RuPaul's Drag Race, and other fabulous queens like Aggie Dune and Ambrosia Salad here in Rochester. But I didn't know that they had a backstory. I didn't know any of that. And for us to be able to create that together, it's right from the get-go, right on that drive home. It was a 12-hour drive. We started talking about what we would do. And I immediately said, first pet, first street, Kasha, angry white poodle, Davis, a boring basic street in a suburb. And then we become this couple that the wife is looking to try to find and be a star. And it's very much the typical cookie cutter thing, like a Lucy and Ricky from I Love Lucy, that classic television show.
I love that you were able to kind of build all that storytelling into it, because I think that is demanded more from drag now. And RuPaul's Drag Race is a big part of that. A lot of queens, you know, that kind of exposure was the first time people saw them out of drag, even. You know, in times gone by, there was more stigma and there was kind of more normalized judgment, I guess. And so a lot of people did feel they needed to be in their queen persona all of the time, you know, to kind of have the limelight at all. And now it's interesting to see, like, so many of the Drag Race stars, not only do we see the backstory, but now there's increasingly kind of careers out of drag. Like, sometimes it's podcasting, sometimes it's Trixie running a cosmetics company, and they're, you know, they're increasing kind of like dual celebrities as both the male and the female.
It's wonderful. And I really think it just provides so many different examples for people out in the world, no matter how they identify. And, you know, it could be, for instance, I do Story Hour, and it's reading books to the kids, and the parents, of course, attend. And some of the dads or uncles will say, I have a grandson or a son or a daughter, and they are identifying XYZ, but you made me see that there's a community and that there are people thriving in the world. You see, when I was younger, and you're younger than I am, but back then, the examples were only tragic characters or goofy only. Not that that's not an example, but they were only like to be made fun of. And so now we see so many different examples of people living their authentic selves that it creates space in people's minds and hearts to say, not only can I follow a path that I feel as though I'd like to follow, but also family members can say, oh, little Eddie's going to be all right. Or whoever.
Yeah, absolutely. For yourself, when you kind of look back at what you wanted out of your relationship future, and you've kind of created both a professional drag persona, but then also very much your day-to-day life out of drag as this like suburban housewife kind of fantasy there. How much do you think that was kind of informed by knowing that even when you didn't see examples of that, that was the thing for you? And do you think that maybe that was partly something that brought you and Mr. Davis together, that you'd both had previous marriages, you'd both had a kind of taste for that life?
I think it really did. I think it really helped us to say that we had a common experience together. You know, we both had relationships outside of our marriages, and it was devastating to feel as though we were obviously cheating, but we were also just not being our authentic selves to ourselves or to our spouse, and in his case, to his children. And it's just a terrible feeling. It's a terrible feeling. So we could connect on that level. And then, you know, when I was a little boy, girl, gal, girl, boy, fella, I always like to say, a child, I just never felt like I could fit in. And so it was a mission of mine. I lived in the city. I lived in New York City. I lived in the downtown Rochester area. But there was a part of me that was like, I loved my childhood. I loved having the cul-de-sac and the neighborhood feel. And I thought there's a place for everyone in these neighborhoods. And I'm proud to say we've been in our current neighborhood now for 15 years, or maybe a little over that. But we walk through and people know us not just as Ed and Steve, who have a husky dog, but that's Mrs. Kasha Davis. They'll say, you know, she's a drag queen. And so it's wonderful. And I'm not dressed in drag. I'm just walking our dog with my husband in our neighborhood. And it becomes more and more of a community, and it's more accepted. Now, is every household like that? Of course not. But I'm seeing more diversity that way. And the suburban word can sound really like there's a, you know, there's no diversity welcome into those neighborhoods. And so I'm proud to say that, that at least the neighborhood that I live in, that more and more we're seeing at all walks of life and all colors and all genders. And it's fascinating to see even some of the kids are starting to come to the story time that I do, and their parents are bringing them, and they'll come to our drag brunches, and we're a community. And that really makes me feel terrific, just because there's a place for all of us in this world.
Yeah. And, you know, I know how much you give back to your local community, that you want to like rep your area. You want to make sure the shows are on there, even though it's a smaller place. And yeah, that you're being a big part of that representation. And I think something that's lovely hearing you describe that is there's something very courageous about it in a way that we don't sort of stereotypically think of, because sometimes it is going out and deciding we're making our own rules. We're going to have exactly the kind of relationship we dream up. And sometimes it, no, I reserve the right to have the relationship that I kind of saw growing up. And I'm, you know, I'm not as different as some people might think. And there's like a courageousness in have the wild life where you throw out all the rules, or be like, no, we're entitled to get married too.
Yes. And within those terms, marriage, people can find their own definitions of that, especially in the queer community. Not that they don't in the heterosexual community too, but it's just not as talked about. And I think that it's fantastic that people have so much more exposure, like your podcast, like social media. Sometimes people are like, oh gosh, social media takes up so much time. And it just, we are able to see more examples of people living this happy, healthy life. Yes, the negative stuff gets a lot of attention, but people are still looking at the good news movement type stuff and the positive messaging and the examples out there. And it does make a difference in people's mental health.
Oh, absolutely. And I think as well, people are waking up to the extent of that, and that even in the crazy digital landscape, we can still support our mental health in so many ways. And, you know, algorithms can be used against us to sell things, but they can also be used for us, you know, engaging with the kind of content you want to see, making sure you kind of follow, let's say, diverse body sizes, let's say, you know, a different, you know, formats of relationships. There's a lot of examples we can bring into our space, bring into our feed. Then whilst we may not be able to turn off very easily the comparison culture, we can find people to compare ourselves where we're like, oh, I do see myself reflected.
Yes. I love that. That was very well said.
Did you notice I also have a mental health podcast?
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. So clearly. And it's so important. And obviously, it sometimes becomes a stigma. You know, am 7.5 years sober, and that alcoholism is an addiction is classified as something as a mental health issue. And so I love to bring it up and I love to talk about these things because that is how somebody listening and they're hearing this example is going to say, oh, it's possible to be happy and healthy and to have something that you're dealing with or going through. You know, you're talking about the different examples and I'm so excited to follow different people. I'm more of the Instagram. Mr. Davis handles TikTok. We do it together, but he does that one. And they do take a lot of time, as you know. And I enjoy following different people. And this morning I found somebody who she was doing her haul. She bought all this stuff and she wanted to show everybody. And she's plus size. And she was so just gloriously fabulous. And she was enjoying the wares. And one of the things she said, this is horrible. Like she hated it, you know? And she was just open and honest. And she said, you know, this one looks really great. And I love this. It's cute. And back in my day, unfortunately, the stigma of weight and body size, she would have been, and she probably is, she probably deals with a lot of hate and a lot of negativity, but she had more so what I saw was so much support. And yes, some honesty, like, oh, I didn't like that outfit either. But it was just, it was a community for her. And that just made me feel so good. And I'm so happy to follow her. And so there are all types of examples, as you mentioned. And it's just, that's the positive where we're going with social media.
Yeah. And may I ask what that journey was like for you? Because now you can look back on it and, you know, you've built this incredible life and career for yourself. But there must have been many times, including around your coming out, where you would have wondered, is the life that I grew up dreaming about possible?
Oh, goodness, yes. So I remember one of the reasons why I wouldn't come out is because the main struggle I had back then, and we're talking the realistically dating in the late 80s and getting married into the early 90s, and we stayed married through 98, is that I'm in a small town of Scranton, Pennsylvania, which in the U.S. is where The Office television show is located. So it's this backward type of place. And I saw no examples of relationships. I saw only people in the closet and absolutely no one who identified as gay or queer or lesbian. There were no one had children. And so for me, I, ever since a youngster, I always loved helping my parents with my younger siblings. And I loved my nieces and nephews as time went on. And I just wanted to have that Christmas morning experience and those types of things. And so I went through major periods of depression and my alcoholism was really, really heightened because I just thought it's not possible. You know, all people want is, you know, the hookups, which were great. It was fine, fun, of course, right? But I thought no one wants to have a family. And I was wrong. I just saw no examples of them. And it was a different time where the examples weren't being shown. And so now, whether it's a television show or a podcast or an different examples, it just gives you ideas of how you can form your own life. I did not see those examples. I didn't know they were possible. And I was naive because I didn't necessarily search in some of the right places. When I met Mr. Davis, he didn't tell me he had kids for at least a month in our dating. And then all of a sudden he said to me, I need to talk to you. And I was like, well, here we go. Friendship conversation, right? You know, he's going to say, and he said, I have two daughters. And I literally thought, I absolutely love you. And I have so much fun. Feel like a best friend and I'm attracted to you and there was romance and you came with a ready-made family. So I came into their life when they were 7 and 9 and now our youngest, 28, I believe, just got married and the oldest is still getting her education. She's getting her master's, a librarian. You know, we just went to dinner with them last night and I can't wait if they choose to have them to have grandkids. Could you imagine Mrs. Kasha Davis, the grandmother, father, person.
A whole new era. And, you know, I'm sure you'll love it. I'm also sure you'll find a way to monetize it.
Right?
A whole new era.
Well, I mean, I don't even know. I think I can't wait. I always tell Mr. Davis, you know, who knows, right? Some opportunity might come and they'll say, would you move to LA? And I'm like, I can't because I have to be here for the flute concert or for the, you know, dance recital. I have to be in the front row and cheering them on. So that is the dream for me. And I get a little emotional thinking about it. And all the rest is icing.
It's so heartwarming to hear and the way that you get to, you know, include that in your character. Because am I right in thinking, you know, even with creating Mrs. Kasha Davis, that was a character that was older by quite a margin when you started, and now you're kind of growing into it. So that's what I was thinking.
I'm catching up.
Well, that's what I thought of when you said about being a grandparent. I was like, well, then you could be like, look like a young granny and do it all over again.
Right. I always gravitated to the characters on television that were not necessarily the superstar, celebrity, sexy diva. I always wanted to be like the mom or the neighbor or the kooky sister or aunt. And so when I started to think of Mrs. Kasha Davis, that's how I started to think of the character I was creating. And then we originally thought Mr. Davis would never be seen. You would only hear about him and you'd only hear his voice, but you never see him. And then we just eventually couldn't help ourselves. So there was that whole concept, but she was older. She was already married. The kids were out of the house in our minds. And she was boozy. She was drinking too much all the time, which is there's always time for a cocktail. And she just wanted to get on the stage. But Mr. Davis, I had to get the chores done. And I had to, you know, and we would do these videos for YouTube. And it was just like, I'm trying to get all this done so I can get out and perform, you know. And she was never really that good. You know, you would cheer her on because she's just, you know, she's got something, but it's not it. And that is the fun part because she's always the underdog. And lo and behold, it seems to be the story of my career too, which is great. And I'll end this rant or this little to say that what I have learned about social media and what I have learned about this last several years is that I no longer have to pretend as much to be a character. I am just me. I change my persona a bit when I put on the wig and the lashes, and of course, right? But I don't have secrets. I tell it all. If somebody reaches out and wants to do a podcast, I can't wait to do it. Ask me the questions. I'm an open book. If I don't want to answer, I won't answer. Or if I can't, I won't. But I believe in just being as honest and open as possible. And I think people can tell.
I absolutely think they can. And, you know, to an extent, I think with any kind of performance, it is authenticity we connect with. Take something like drag, where the artistry is so heightened. I think still so much of what we connect to is still the person behind the wigs and the gowns and the finery. You know, we're connecting with their passion for the music, for the art, for the stage, people genuinely living their passions. You know, I see the same when I like interview comedians. A lot of the time they kind of start off and their like first hour of material is all the things they couldn't say. The first however many years of their life comes out in, this is my perspective. This is the stuff I've always wanted to say on the stage. And then as their career grows, it becomes, okay, this is what I'm thinking about today. It becomes a lot more kind of current. Oh, now I think I'm just being myself. And where is the persona versus me day to day?
Yeah. And the funniest and or most heartwarming or word you want to use is the truth. You know, whatever happened in your day, if it's the truth, sure, you might put a little bit of a flair to it when you're telling the story on stage. But for the most part, you're telling the truth. There's nothing funnier sometimes, or there's nothing more heartwarming. And if you try to tell somebody else's story as an actor, you want to find your truth within it so that the audience can tell. And, you know, I worked in telemarketing. I was a director of a call center for 18 years. And this was something we used to teach the callers. You know, if they would slump in their chair and they hated what they were talking about or hated their, I'm like, do you realize, although you are over a telephone, they can tell. And so we need to work on how we sit and how we think and how we believe in a product or a service and how we're helping people. And then people immediately, they're connected.
And I've never really thought of that, but like that is a great argument for like the power of drag right there, because you could hardly put in more effort to be like, okay, what is the best foot forward I can set?
Well, interesting. There's so much drag right now, right? How are you going to stand out? The only way you can stand out is by telling the truth. Because first of all, we're all imitating something or someone or putting on a
persona. Yeah.
Persona.
Or all of us are doing a gender performance to some degree, like, oh, I think I should be into sport because I'm a little boy, or, you know, I'm not sure if I like dresses, but my mom expects me to wear one because I'm a girl.
Absolutely. And so then what truth do we tell through that? And I think that is what people can gravitate to. And then if you take it to the level of, say, for instance, Drag Race, we already have a Trixie Mattel, right? And if you decide you're going to do, other than, I think there's one Trixie Mattel impersonator who's seems to be doing fantastic. She's out in LA and Trixie approved. And, you know, but if you try, I did it. I literally did. We came back from our season and I was like doing my lashes down here or something. And Darian said, what the hell are you doing? I said, I don't know. I guess I thought that's what people wanted. And that's the worst thing you can do, you know, for any performer in general. But if you try to give them, if you're just trying to give the audience what they want, not what you want to express, there's a stumbling block there. I'll never forget, people would say, oh, you have to do top 40 songs. I'm like, listen, the songs I do were top 40 40 years ago. So, you know.
Yeah, they were top 40 once. That works.
They were once. Yeah, maybe. And so I love them. And if you can feel the love I have, you might hear the song and be like, what is this? But then all of a sudden you're like, she is just having a great time, whether I'm singing live or I'm lip syncing. And they're like, now I'm interested.
Yeah. And you're not going to be competing with all the girls that want to do the latest Beyonce song.
Right. And there at the same time, if I do, and I have done a Beyonce song, I'm going to do it like Mrs. Kasha Davis is trying to do the Beyonce song to be cool, but then she's awkward. Like she's like, oh, look at me, I'm doing it, you know? And then it's like, okay, that's funny. But if I just try to do it just like the other gal who's does it flawless, that doesn't work.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think people can really read it when it's an imitation. You don't need to see the person you're imitating to know, like, this doesn't feel organic.
Right. The whole time I've been wanting to tell you that I love your eyeshadow. Since we logged in, and I hadn't had a chance, and it looks great.
Thank you. I love makeup. A lot of the time I can't be bothered with it, to be honest, because thankfully I have a job that doesn't necessitate it. Okay. But I had to make an effort.
Oh, well,
and I find makeup very fun. So I'm glad you like it.
Yes, it looks terrific.
And tell me this then. So when I've interviewed queens in the past, something that often comes up is that a lot has changed in terms of people being open to dating drag queens, or being open about, you know, dating them and then being open about that. And so it sounds like, you know, you and Mr. Davis had a kind of a parallel there where maybe, you know, he was experiencing not everyone would maybe be open dating somebody with kids, and then you were experiencing some people have weird opinions about dating a drag queen, you know, that they don't have about, you know, whether or not they'll date a plumber. I don't know, maybe right. Some people do. How was it navigating those parallels?
Well, so early on, before I did any drag, he was just telling me people he had dated, and he dated a queen. And I thought, well, isn't that impressive? Now, I had no interest in doing drag at that time. This was early on in our relationship. And so I just began to love him a little bit more. I thought, well, that is, and I knew who he was referencing. And I thought, well, that is just adorable. I'm so glad that you did. You know, they dated for a little bit and it didn't work out or whatever, but it was like, he was like, yeah, that's just something that they love to do. That made me love him even more, because he's sort of like, you know, an introvert, and he has sung in a band and he's done some theater, but for the most part, he likes to stay behind the scenes. And you would think like, oh, he would be drawing too much attention. He loves it. If you love something, he loves it. And that just really just, it made me love him more early on. Like I was like, oh, wow. And so then when I made the decision and we talked about it together, I thought, well, he's obviously not going to have a problem with it. Where I had a problem later on was I was doing drag and we weren't telling the kids yet. So we had moved in together. We weren't married yet. Marriage wasn't legal. It wasn't even a thought. But we were living together and they'd go to bed and then I'd sneak out late. I'd sneak into the basement, get ready. And I came home one night and I'm like, I just don't want to do this anymore. I'm going to continue doing drag because it's something I'm passionate about. And so we sat down with them. Well, they had a blast. I mean, these two young girls could get dressed up then. They were like, why didn't you tell me, you know, that you had all these costumes? And
you were hiding glitter this whole time.
Oh my gosh. They were like, this is not fair. Like, how long did you do, you know? And so then they began like just having so much fun. And that our favorite story to tell is that we were watching TV and they were going to do a show for us. So they would go up and down the steps and they got dressed up in every animal print they can find. And they came upstairs and they were like, I'm a crazy zookeeper, which was just, we just thought it was the cutest thing. And they were clunking around in the heels and it was great. And I think it really helped them both in their upbringing as to, because they came from a really small town where there was no LGBTQ or queer kind of representation in the schools or anything. And our daughters started the first club at their high school, the Ally Club. And so it just made me feel so proud to see that they were able to be a part of this and we grew as a family, and they were able to give back to their community.
I love that. And I think that's such a wonderful example of the opposite of a lot of fear mongering that we can see at times, you know, push back as the world becomes more progressive. You know, I think there is a certain amount of organic pushback where people feel that their idea of society is changing, when in fact it's just more people's existence are being acknowledged in our modern society. You know, it's lovely to hear a story like that, because it just, again, it shows the autonomy that young people have. They were able to kind of find joy in your work, but also find themselves in it. So they went to school and they knew, okay, we're forming the Ally Club. You know, we know that we can have a place that interacts with this community. We understand and support it. And, you know, it's not that idea of like, you're either in something or you're not.
Right. And they were able to be there for their friends that eventually came out, and still, you know, close with some of them, like, you know, high school, some of that stuff changes, but they were able to be there for them and to help them in their process. And coming out in a small town and just knowing that, hey, we've got two gay dads, and it's just that's been a joy. When they meet people on, what is it, you know, the social media apps now, the one that's still dating, it's a big deal. I mean, you know, they've got to screen through to make sure that they're, you know, going to be not just willing to be okay with a dad who's got a husband, but also a dad who's a drag queen, you know, so there's a lot to unpack there. And it's a part of the, you know, of the screening process in their day.
Yeah, which makes a lot of sense. I mean, in one way, it's a bit of a shortcut to like, are we the same kind of area of politics? If you don't like the idea of my drag queen dad, probably not.
Probably not going to work out. Yeah.
You know, tell me, you know, along these lines, I interviewed Eureka O'Hara recently, and, you know, she was sharing with me a lot of their current pushback to do with Drag Queen Story Hour. And as one of, you know, the drag queens that it's really known for reading stories to young people and inspiring them to know that they can grow up and be whatever they want to be, wig or no wig, would you mind kind of sharing any of your thoughts that you have?
You know, I stumbled upon Story Hour as a suggestion from Angela Washko, who is the director of Workhorse Queen, the documentary, and then also Mary Tabali Hoffman, who is my partner on the television show Imagination Station that we created at our local theater. She said, you know, I think you would really love to do Story Hour. There's this group in San Francisco doing it. This is a couple years ago. And I said, yeah, I think I would. And I can't even explain to you, when you see those little faces, you know, it's one thing when you're in an audience and you imagine everybody in the audience, but we have the kids sit on the floor and all these little faces are looking at you and they're just watching every moment. And some of them can speak. Some of them aren't able to speak yet. They don't know their words, but their eyes are bright and they want to touch the sequin and they are just enamored by the fabulosity of it all. And all they know is that Mrs. Kasha Davis loves to read books and she lives here at the theater, I think, you know, and I was interviewed one time and they said, so why don't you explain to the children why you're dressed in drag? I said, because they haven't asked the question. If they should ask the question, we will talk about it. But the baseline messaging that we have of our Story Hour performances that are live and the television show that we've created is, if you happen to see someone different in the world, treat them with kindness. We don't tell the story of how to get into drag. I just happen to be in drag. I'm a character. And if you know Mrs. Doubtfire, it's as if Mrs. Doubtfire was hosting Pee-wee's Playhouse in Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. So we've created a whole community. And it's, yes, it's fabulous. And yes, there's some things, but everybody is accepted for exactly who they are. And we try not to, in our writing on the television program, we have a neighbor, his nickname is Wheels, who happens to be using a wheelchair, who's a really great handyman. That's it. We never talk about anything. Yes, Wheels comes in a wheelchair. Yes, you can see that that is how he lives. But what we focus on is that he's really good at fixing things and we need his help. That's it. So if someone watching happens to be in that same situation, they can see that someone is being celebrated for something. And there's no need to explain anything else. It's pretty
and justify right. His existence on the show.
Yes, he's our neighbor, who's our friend, who's a handyman.
Yeah, well, that's it. He's there because he's a neighbor. And, you know, that's the lovely thing about, I'd imagine, working with kids, because, you know, they start off accepting. The hate is learned.
The hate is learned. Now, politically, we know and we can dissect that the reasoning why it's a deflection about this and it's a deflection about that, and we're focusing, oh, drag queens are grooming and all of these situations, and none of them have attended the shows. None of them attend the Story House to watch what they're criticizing first. They just have this decision that they've made. And I say deflection on other things like abortion, and they're looking to not focus on that. Let's focus on this. Look at how this horrible thing that is happening. And when I tell you the parents that have come up, but specifically, it reminds me of my childhood, the grandparents and the fathers that say thank you in tears for showing me that my children have a community. I'm never going to stop doing it because I know that that helped those particular individuals. Help them see a future for that child, and it helped them to maybe just be like, oh, this is not that big of a deal. And there are 200 people here today having fun, doing a craft, dancing, singing, listening to a book, having a good time. And so however that child grows up, they're providing this experience not just for their existence, but how they see other people. And we're teaching and talking to the kids about, yes, if you see someone different, treat them with kindness, different than you. And so, as you said, already know that, but their parents, just like a children's book is meant for the parents, these performances are also for children of all ages. I was also very happy to do Storytime Live during the pandemic on the internet. The kids don't have a computer necessarily. I didn't get messages from kids. I got messages from adults all over the world watching it saying, thank you for this lovely message that came with this book. And so I identify that a lot of times when I did that, my audience was maybe parents were sitting with their kids, but for the most part, it was probably young adults or adults watching who just needed a dose of positivity. And what's so wrong with that? You know?
Oh, yeah. Well, no, I mean, I certainly don't believe that's something we should grow out of. I think that's ridiculous. Yeah. And, you know, it's lovely to have that, you know, in particularly in a time like COVID where so much was incredibly difficult. We all need that bit of escapism. I'm also reminded, as you share, of a lovely part of your documentary where you talked about a young girl that was very shy and like socially awkward and didn't feel comfortable around other kids. Her parents kept bringing her to your story hour as a way to kind of get her out socializing. And, you know, she went from being someone you didn't notice to someone that was always sat in the front row and always interacting.
It makes me so happy. Well, it's a wonderful example. And I think that it does take time, and we will continue to probably have some situations. I think that we are learning to have, unfortunately, some security at different things, but that's okay. Eureka, you mentioned, that show is amazing that they're going into these towns and they're doing this drag show and we're here and they're doing this and they're having people, you know, they're not doing a story time, they're doing a drag show, but the adults are seeing things in some
cases. It's a very parallel impact. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And I have noticed we do a drag brunch. And in our drag brunches, I have noticed that the audience is primarily people who identify as straight. And they come and they have a good time and they come back. And you just never know what that particular moment. They're all here. There are people of all walks of life, all playing in different ways in the room together. And they go home and they're like, you know what, I had a good time with everybody. And the drag queens were very entertaining. Maybe their nephew, niece, son or daughter, whoever, they may see it a different way and be like, in a way, it was like a story.
Lot of fun as well. You know, like, who doesn't want to go for brunch, which is already great? A drag show where you've got an entertainer at your brunch, like go with your awkward family that don't know how to talk to each other and you can just go watch and eat. I think it's such a fun form of entertainment.
Well, now I know that Panto is a very popular, right?
Yeah, and in the UK and Ireland, definitely.
I think there are some countries where it's sort of already a part of the culture. And here in the US, we're a little late. We're younger, trying to catch up.
Yeah, well, particularly, you know, the funny dame role is very well established, you know, so that's a kind of contrast with the US where a lot of the drag comes from the pageantry system and competing in a lot of, you know, talent, but more skewed towards maybe looks in a way that here it's like, oh no, it's like the more ridiculous, the better.
Right. Yeah.
Come out, you know, there's not really an expectation to look like a convincing woman in any shape or form.
Yeah.
And yeah, and it's, this is what it is. It's normalized because people have seen it before. You know, it's nothing more than that. And so as we start to wrap up then, do you have a bit of advice to share, having this wonderful family, this wonderful relationship, for others that are looking for the same?
I always, the two things that come to mind is talk about whatever it is that you need to talk about it, but give the other person in the relationship a minute to walk it out. You know, you don't have to talk about it in the moment. Give somebody some space if they need it, but make sure you don't let things build and fester. And because we have a tendency sometimes to let things get bigger than they are, and they just need that conversation. They may not need it that moment. You might need to walk and but talk about it. And then the other thing that I think is so fun and so important is find the time to dance in the kitchen. And I use that particular analogy. You know,
I dance in this kitchen regularly. Yeah.
Right?
I'm so on board.
It's good acoustics. You've got a little bit of a dance floor. It's an open space. And you want to be able to have that time together to tease and to dance. And, you know, life gets busy. People have New Year's resolutions. And I said to Mr. Davis, because we're in a long-term relationship, and sometimes you're in a hurry and you forget to dance in the kitchen, and you might run out the door and give a quick kiss goodbye. I said, New Year's resolution 2023, longer kisses. And so they start out funny, but you never know, right? So it's those conscious efforts to continue to connect.
I love that so much. And the rule of the game I'm going to add, I'm thinking with what we shared earlier about, you know, curating your kind of online experience, that we can all find ways to practically make our digital world a happier one for us. And, you know, something I'm reminded of is my last relationship was with someone who had never dated a man before. And, you know, something that was a kind of learning process for him that I guess surprised me, because I was figuring out being attracted to all genders from quite a young age, was he kept kind of talking about figuring out what he's attracted to. That was quite a new thing, realizing, like, what is it about men? You know, what things do I find attractive? He was already kind of knew all that with women. And it got me thinking about that just there of, you know, that can be a part of it with our digital lives as well, that follow the kind of relationships that you look up to, find relationships to look up to. I think that can be very powerful. And in it, you may learn a few things of, oh, maybe there's a type of dynamic that I hadn't considered before, you know,
right.
And I can attest to, I mean, you know, hosting a podcast like this one, you know, I didn't think my eyes were closed, but I get to hear about so many relationships I'm not in. And I'm always finding things that I'm like, oh, that's great. Yeah. Dancing in the kitchen. Why aren't I doing that more with other people, not just myself? Gotta inflict that on other people. Next relationship I'm in.
Right. Before you all go out, you know, the next time you end up going out of the town, it's like, well, before we go, we have to all dance in the kitchen. And it creates just a laugh. The sound is good. And you just, you know, it's another way to connect.
Yeah. Be fun. Keep that connection to, like, fun childhood that you're so, you know, so great at encapsulating. And so on that note, we will wrap up there. If people want to find you, I'm going to include definitely some details for how people can find the documentary. I'd say the easiest, having had to search for it myself from this part of the world, would be it's via an online streaming service that I can link, but you might need a VPN for it. I've previously been sponsored by ExpressVPN, so if I can dig out the promo code, I'll also put that in the description. So the gamers have no excuse to not go watch your wonderful documentary called, I just
Workhorse
fucking watched
Queen.
It. It's called Workhorse Queen, and it's such a wonderful documentary. Would thoroughly recommend. I rewatched it today. Also, the show we mentioned, We're Here, you can get that on Now TV in the UK and Ireland, and Discovery Plus, I believe, in the States and other places, or HBO Max, one of the two. So yeah, totally recommend that. If you want Queer Eye, but with drag queens, We're Here is the show for you.
That's the show.
So there, loads of fun, uplifting content like you're known for. Anything else you want to plug, social media?
No, I always say you can follow any of the social medias. You can follow me on InstaSnatch, Twitter, and FacePlace. It's all Mrs. Kasia Davis.
Love it. Branding, branding, branding. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you.
Thanks for listening.
For the full experience, you can join our subscription on Apple Podcasts to access extended ad-free episodes. Our show is edited and produced by Pete Murta.
The music is Digital Damage by me, Emma Becco.
We're proud to be an independent production.
And leaving a quick review is another way to support the show.
Speak to you next Friday. Until then, good luck out there.